is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Afghanistan. I welcome Bill Raggio, the senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He and his colleague Tom Jocelyn and their colleagues run the Long War Journal. Bill, a very good evening to you. Joining the leadership in Afghanistan is a Haqqani Network relative. Who is he? What is his significance? And what did the U.S. say of him when he was in custody? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Yes. So late last week, the Taliban made additional announcements, the appointments to its new government. One of these individuals who is named as the leader of the or the governor of Logar province. This is a central province right on the outskirts of Kabul. It's a key province that you would want to secure. The Taliban named an individual known as Haji Mali Khan to be the governor there. He is the uncle of Sirajuddin Haqqani, who's the Taliban's deputy emir and its current minister of the interior. Sirajuddin is arguably one of the most powerful Taliban leaders, if not the most powerful Taliban leader, closely tied to Al-Qaeda. The United Nations identified Sirajuddin as an Al-Qaeda leader. So, you know, what does that make Al-Qaeda? What does that make the Taliban? But Haji Mali Khan, the U.S. actually detained him in 2011, and he was in a prison for 8 years. Before his detention, he was the right hand of Siraj Haqqani. He filled in numerous leadership roles for the Haqqani Network. The Haqqani Network, that's an integral part of the Taliban, operates in eastern and central, northern, and even southern Afghanistan. Also in Pakistan, Haji Mali Khan, just a very influential Taliban figure. He was released in 2019, exchanged for, along with two other Haqqani leaders, including Anas Haqqani, who is Siraj's brother. And they were freed for an American and an Australian who were captured by the Haqqanis and held in custody. They were professors at the American University. So 2 years later, he's a senior leader in the Taliban's government.
Bill, remind me of the Haqqani Network's involvement in the assassination of CIA officers during the Obama administration.
Yeah, this is a combat outpost Chapman, which occurred in, I believe it was December 31st, 2009. Combat outpost Chapman was in eastern Afghanistan in a district that was heavily influenced by the Haqqani Network. The Haqqanis were very much more subtle in their control and influence in the districts. They didn't seek to openly govern them. where they sort of allowed the Afghan government to pretend it was in control. This one district where Combat Outpost Chapman, this is where U.S. was directing strikes against Al-Qaeda and top-level Haqqani and Taliban leadership in Pakistan. This is the drone campaign that we documented for well over a decade. And so the attack was actually carried out by the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan. But the Haqqanis never took credit for this. But there is without a doubt a Haqqani role in this attack. A Jordanian was recruited by the movement in Taliban in Pakistan. He went to the base. He pretended he had information on top Al-Qaeda leaders, Zawahiri and bin Laden. And he was brought in. He wasn't searched. He had a suicide bomb and he detonated at the gate and killed several CIA operatives and security guards that were at that base. Again, the Haqqanis didn't advertise its role in this, but they without a doubt helped identify the target and helped help that Jordanian suicide bomber reach his destination in order to conduct that attack. Nothing happens like that on Haqqani territory without the Haqqanis at least knowing what's happening, at the very least. And in a case like this, the Haqqanis are going to want to have a hand in that to ensure the attack was successful. And that attack was indeed successful. It disrupted drone operations for weeks and if not months. It was a major blow to the CIA. Security at all U.S. bases in Afghanistan had to be relooked. How the CIA was operating in eastern Afghanistan was reevaluated as well. So it was a significant attack, and I believe it was probably the largest loss of CIA personnel in a covert operations that I can think of in history. But I may be wrong on that, John, but as far as I know, I can't think of any type of attack where the CIA suffered more casualties than that.
Another Taliban appointment most recently that you're evidencing, Bill, the Kabul province, the Kabul province around the capital of Kabul, a Taliban commander. Who is he and what is he linked to?
Yeah, this one was interesting, just as much as I was intrigued by Haji Mali Khan, who I've been tracking for over a decade. Kari Barial, a guy the U.S. military claimed they killed in the mid-2010s. They thought he was dead. This is a guy who was part of what used to be called the Kabul Attack Network. This was the confluence or the syndicate of the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, of course, which includes the Haqqanis, Lashkar-e-Taiba, Hezbi Islami Gulbuddin. All of these groups pulled their resources together to launch attacks against U.S., against coalition forces, against Afghan forces, NGOs, civilians, targets, including hotels. Kari Barial was a key leader in that. I've been tracking him for at least 15 years. And ironically, before this appointment, I testified in a case recently in Washington as an expert witness where the U.S. was suing Iran. U.S. Soldiers who were either killed or wounded or their family members obviously suing Iran for its involvement in supporting the Taliban. And the evidence for that was significant. Part of the evidence that we came on, again, this was before the appointment. So Kari Barial was very much on my mind in October while doing the testimony. He received cash from Iran to carry out these attacks. This was happening well over a decade. There's even a slide. If you go to the article of World War Journal, I reproduced it. We had an intelligence report declassified. He's identified on there. And he took money from a Taliban official who had close links to Iran. And that money was funneled to Kari Barial to execute these attacks. He's now the governor of Kabul province. Again, Kabul obviously is both the province and then the capital of the country. So he's responsible for security in the heart of the Taliban government. This is a guy who's responsible for killing probably dozens, scores, if not hundreds of Americans in and around Kabul, given his activities. And the Taliban has made him the governor of Kabul.
The report by the U.S. military and the ISAF that Barial was killed, this goes back to January 2011. Was there a martyr tape in that event? Did the Taliban or the Haqqani network or Iran attempt to deceive us about that report?
There was never any confirmation from the Taliban that he was killed. They never released a martyrdom statement. And if I recall, I think they actually said he wasn't killed. But the intelligence report that I'm referring to that was declassified for the trial, that report was written sometime, I believe, in July 2013. So clearly the U.S. military realized at some point that it actually didn't kill Kari Barial. My understanding is they thought they killed him again at a later time. But clearly that's not true as well. Some of this could be related to that. Maybe they thought they got him and they didn't. Some of it could be related to that. There could be other individuals named Kari Barial. I haven't run across any of them, but that certainly is a possibility. But I suspect it was just it's difficult to confirm these things. John, as Tom and I always say, these guys are vampires. Unless you drive a stake through the heart, chop off the head and expose them to sunlight, you don't really know. You can't be sure that you killed them unless you have Kari Barial's corpse and a DNA sample. You're not really certain if he was killed in a raid or not.
The report of his aide from Iran, this is the Quds Force. In other words, he was an operative of the Soleimani, the man the Trump administration targeted, killed in 2020. So we're looking at a man who worked for Soleimani, and he is now the governor of Kabul province. Bill, that sounds like a significant post, is it? This Kabul province surrounds a city of, last time I checked, 3 to 5 million.
Yeah, John, you couldn't be more correct. You know, just the Logar, obviously Kabul would be the most important. The Taliban is basing their government in Kabul this time around. Before, it was largely administered outside in Kandahar from 1996 to 2001. But now it's Kabul. They're going to want to secure it. That is a key posting. It's probably that the posting of governor of Kabul, Governor Logar, Wardak, Parwan, the provinces surrounding Kabul, those provincial governor postings are probably more important than 90% of the ministerial posts that have been put out by the Taliban. Obviously, defense and interior and intelligence and a couple other posts, the ministerial posts would be more important. But these are, you know, these are top tier postings that Bariel and Khan received. They were rewarded for their years of hard work, and in Khan's case, for 8 years of imprisonment. They're now serving the Taliban. This is the Taliban. You know, they don't forget. They take care of their own. They take care of, you know, several former Guantanamo. I think we have 5 or 6 former Gitmo detainees are now senior Taliban leaders, and several others who were detained by the Taliban. The Taliban, its government is made up of Taliban hardliners. All Taliban are hardliners, and they haven't given a single posting out to an individual who is outside of the Taliban sphere.
So we have two names now from the Taliban war fighting. These men are now in a position to govern what we know is an ongoing catastrophe, the famine that has already gripped Afghanistan. The UN says half the country is at risk of food insecurity, including millions of children. And these are the men in charge of feeding that population or not. Bill, if I'm thinking USAID, I'm not thinking that you're going to want to have a conversation with Bariel or Khan. These are not men you would call up and who would be sympathetic to your need to feed people.
Yeah, I mean, you are correct. I agree with you completely. However, I don't think that's the perception in the U.S. government. The U.S. government has been practicing servile diplomacy with the Taliban for the last 4 or 5 years now, even longer. They were eager to leave Afghanistan. The consequences be damned, and how, you know, and now they're eager to reengage. For some reason, they want to end the endless wars, but now want to reengage in Afghanistan, put U.S. taxpayer dollars in the hands of the Taliban. And if the Taliban, real quick, if the Taliban are so concerned about food insecurity and all this, why are they continually having parades of their military held throughout Kabul? I just watched one over the weekend where, you know, helicopters flying and hundreds of trucks, and that's fuel and effort and resources being poured into just a parade. Can't those resources used to be feed the people? I don't think the Taliban care about that. The Taliban care about getting our money, and they'll use it for their own purposes. Feeding the people, that's secondary. As long as they govern, as long as they're in control of Afghanistan, that's what the Taliban wants.
Bill Rajow, a senior fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He and Tom Jocelyn and their colleagues keep the Long War Journal. We're going to turn to ISIS. ISIS is in Afghanistan. How and to what end? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Bill Rajow, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, senior fellow. He and Tom Jocelyn and their colleagues keep the Long War Journal. ISIS. ISIS is in Afghanistan. It opposes the Taliban. And we have this from the New York Times reporting within these days. When the Taliban, hardline Sunni Muslims, seized power in August, they vowed to end decades of bloodshed and sought to measure Afghan Shiites, reassure Afghan Shiites that they would not again be their targets as they were during the group's previous rule from 96 to 2001. This time around, the Taliban have allowed Shiites to observe the holy holiday of Ashura. They dispatched a Shiite cleric to do outreach in Shiite communities. They visited Shiite mosques to demonstrate solidarity, and they vowed that the new government would keep them safe. What we have to answer that is a series of attacks against mosques by suicide bombers taken credit by the ISIS. So the question always, what role is ISIS playing in the new Afghanistan under the control of what is presented as the generous and tolerant Taliban? Bill, your measure with Tom has been that the ISIS are not strong enough to overwhelm Taliban. But how do you see them going forward into 2022? What can they do to in some way weaken the Taliban?
Yeah, John, so the Islamic State Khorasan province, you know, right now they're playing the role of the spoiler. They're able to launch, it seems to be, one large scale or medium scale attack against soft targets. Think of these as mosques. One of them was a military hospital, but it was a hospital, not a military base or a secure government facility. They're using suicide tactics to do this. So the Islamic State can, and then there's these smaller bombings that we're seeing, either IEDs and whatnot, that are having a much smaller effect, getting much less press. So, you know, that's what the Islamic State can muster right now. I don't think they have the capability, at least in the short to midterm. Think of that as from now till, say, up to 2 to 3 years, to threaten the viability of the Taliban and its rule in Afghanistan. The Islamic State does not have foreign support. It doesn't have Pakistan and Iran supporting it like the Taliban did against the U.S. and Afghan government. It doesn't have allied jihadist groups that support it like the Taliban did, like the Taliban had the movement of Taliban in Pakistan, Al-Qaeda, a host of Pakistani and Central Asian jihadist groups backing it. And it doesn't control any territory inside of Afghanistan. So its ability to influence events in Afghanistan are limited to terror attacks, to killing people, to, in some cases, spectacular attacks. I don't think, you know, this is bad for the Taliban from a public relations standpoint. I just maintain that unfortunately in the press, I think what we're seeing is that this means to the press that the Islamic State is the real threat that emanates from Afghanistan because they're bloody terrorists. But the real threat to me, and it should be to everyone, is the Taliban, because they are also bloody terrorists, as we witnessed over the last 20 years, who have alliances, who have state sponsors, other state sponsors. It's a state itself. It doesn't need state sponsorship, but it has allies with Pakistan. And I mean, it remains to be seen what its relationship is with Iran now, but I think Iran is quite comfortable with the Taliban in control. And it's closely allied to Al-Qaeda and a host of terror groups. I mean, I know which one seems to be the greater threat. And it isn't the group that doesn't control territory, that can only muster the strength for, an occasional, a weekly terror attack. And, it doesn't control the apparatus of the state.
And at this point, then, the attacks on the Shiite mosques are soft targets. And that's the way we should regard these, soft targets for spectacular raids. Bill Rajo, he is a senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He and Tom Joslin keep the Long War Journal peering into darkness visible, Afghanistan. CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.